If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, welcome to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. My name is Henry Melcher. I'm a producer at the show. So the show is still on hiatus this week, but the podcast is still not on hiatus. And for this podcast, we have some really interesting, great, exclusive content for you. In this episode, Seth talks to two real entertainment icons. First, he chats with John Cleese about his history with Monty Python. And after that interview, I had the honor of going backstage with him and continuing to chat with him about his early days in comedy and what it's like doing comedy today in this crazy news environment. After that, you'll hear Seth talk to Nathan Lane about starring in Angels in America on Broadway, which everyone says is just fantastic. And after that conversation, he chats with my colleague, Sarah Jenks Daly. We also wanted to ask if you enjoy this podcast to please tell your friends about this podcast. They can listen for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever they get their podcasts. Thanks for spreading the word. And here is Seth's conversation with John Cleese.
Our guest tonight is a comedy legend, Oscar-nominated writer, and founding member of the iconic comedy group Monty Python. You can see him on his North American tour, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, with John Cleese. Please welcome back to the show, John Cleese, everybody. Welcome back.
It's nice to be back.
It's been a while. You are touring around doing the show. Are you? Where do you even consider that you're living right now? Where do you live?
In hotel rooms.
Yeah. Do you enjoy hotel living?
No. What I find about hotels is really... They're quite bad, you know.
What do you dislike about hotels?
Well, there's lots of things. I mean, first of all, you can never get the room temperature right.
I agree with that.
Right? Secondly, yeah. When you want to go to sleep at night, there's always one light and you can't find where the switch is.
Yep, that's right? Awesome. Very
true. Then they charge you $10 a bottle for...
Water.
Water.
Yeah.
You know? But what I love is the madness. Quick story. Hotel in Miami, uh-huh. Right? Went to the spa, had a massage, came upstairs, and I got a phone call. Hello, Mr. Cleese, you left your slippers, these actually, in the spa. May we bring them up? I said, of course you may. So, I opened it. Oh, thank you. They're in a nice bag. Very good. Could I have some identification? So I said, now you called me Mr. Cleese and you know my room number. And they said, we'd like some formal identification.
Oh, my God.
So I went over and I got my autobiography. Where I had a copy. Held it up to my face. You notice the similarity? That's chunky. And you know what he said? I'm afraid that's not good enough. Oh.
I love the level of scam that someone would have to pull to get a free pair of slippers.
But they're all automatic, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
What amuses me is that when you get into the room, the hotel room, and you go, and you have a little mucus in your mouth, you want to clear it, you walk around the room looking for the tissues.
Yeah.
You know where the tissues are? They're in the bathroom that far from the toilet roll. You see, so if you're in the bathroom, you've got a choice of tissues.
Right.
If you're anywhere else in the apartment.
That's true, there's never.
So you take them, you know what I mean, and you put them on the desk so that when you're doing your computer, you go,
yeah.
So you get back later that day, and the maid has moved them back in the bathroom.
Yeah. Which is nonsense.
She says, so you take them out again, and the next day she takes them back in again. You know, I don't know.
As if they wandered off on their own.
Well, she knows where they ought to be.
Yeah, that's true. How dare we tell her how to do her job? This is very exciting. You're traveling around with Monty Python and the Holy Grail, a personal favorite of mine. And so people love this movie now. It was not a joy to make, though. Is that accurate?
It was miserable. Yeah. It was Scotland in April. And the weather in Scotland is really bad, except for 2 weeks in September.
Yeah.
And we were just miserable. We were wet. We got on the mountainside with that strange chain mail with knitted string. And after about 10 minutes, it would start to rain. And we could afford about 3 umbrellas. I mean, the film was made for $400,000.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, the interesting thing is it looks beautiful because Scotland looks old. So it looks accurate to what you were doing.
And the castle, we were only allowed to film in this one castle, Doon Castle. And we tried to film everywhere else. They said, oh, no, you can't have comedy here. There's real history here. You can't have comedy. It is now a tourist spot.
Really? The actual
Doon
Monty
Castle,
Python?
The actual Monty Python attracts tourists from all over the world.
And you did have to come up with some inventive things that people probably credited as comedy writing, but were actually done out of necessity for your budget. Like the actual coconuts for the horses.
Yeah.
You guys couldn't afford horses. Is that true?
No, that's that is why Michael Palin, bless him, came up with the idea of the coconuts,
that's
you see.
That's so funny.
You know, it is that necessity is the mother of invention. And sometimes when you don't have much and you have to improvise, that's sometimes when the very best ideas come through.
Did you ever... So, Monty Python, you made that $400,000. That was your first one of your movies,
yes?
Did they start giving you more money for their other movies, or were they always shoestring?
Well, then, after that, we did Life of Brian. Mm-hmm. And this is extraordinary.
Yeah, please.
Thank you. This is an extraordinary story. We couldn't get anyone to give us £2 million to make Life of Brian. You know, it took a fortune.
Yeah.
We couldn't get anyone. And we went around England, and then we came to the studios here in Hollywood and New York, and nobody was prepared to put the money up.
Was it because they didn't? Was it because it was about religion, or just they didn't think?
Well, I don't think that at that point that was so much of a problem.
Oh, funny!
But then the most extraordinary thing is Eric Idle rang us all up. I'd already made arrangements to do a movie in Vienna with Peter Sellers because I thought it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And Eric said the movie's on, and we said, why? And he said, George Harrison is putting the money up.
Wow.
He knew George. Yeah. He knew George. He gave George the script, and George rang him up the next day and said, I'm putting the money up. And Eric said, what are you talking about? He said, I'll put the money up.
That's amazing.
And Eric said, why? And dear George said, I want to see the movie. Isn't that amazing?
That's fantastic.
I know. So, I mean, you know, I think it's the best film Python ever made.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have been made if it wasn't for George Harrison.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. God bless is right.
Yeah.
You do a Q&A when you show this film.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And what sort of questions do people ask you? Do you like...
Well, that's what I love is you don't know. You see, when you do your one-man show, you say pretty much the same as you said the previous night.
Yeah.
And if it's a great audience, you have a good time. And if it's a slow audience, like El Paso... You wonder at the end whether they're going to kill you.
Yeah.
And they're very nice, and they clap, so that was their way of enjoying it.
Yes. I do like... It's nice to engage with people. Do you do your Q&A at the end, or...?
Yes, I do it at the end. You never know what they're going to ask.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was doing it with Eric a couple of years ago, one quite young, attractive woman said to Eric, what is your favourite sexual position? How's he going to get out of that?
Yeah.
And without batting an eyelid, Eric said, oh, the male marital position, that's the man flat on his back with his wallet wide open. But the strangest one, I mean, the one that totally broke me up was It was in Florida, and a lady, rather smartly dressed, middle-aged lady, but very smart, got up and said, Mr. Ryder, Mr. Cleese, may I ask you a serious question? So, of course, she said, did the Queen kill Diana? There were 2,000 people there, all went, and I was the only one laughing.
Yeah.
You know, I just was falling.
Yeah.
In the end, I had time to think, and I said, well, certainly not with her bare hands. But it's great when you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I love that.
You also, every now and then, somebody will walk out of your show.
Oh, yeah.
And you celebrate them.
Well, I think it's very brave.
Yeah.
You know? Because after all, most... most Python fans aren't Trump fans, let's face
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's true. There's not a lot of...
Yeah. And if I do a Trump joke sometimes, you can see somebody go, hmm, and they get up and they walk out of the aisle. And I said, was it the Trump joke? And sometimes they say yes, or sometimes they go, and I think that's great. I say, please, a round of applause for this very, very brave person. And they get a nice round of applause.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
You might, well, you just don't let that catch on, or else people are going to just start leaving just for the applause, you know. You don't want that getting out. It's always such a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
Come soon. Don't stay away this long.
We're going for dinner.
I'll tell you later. John Cleese, everybody. For more information about his visit, johncleeselive.com.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with John Cleese, comedy icon, comedy legend.
Legend.
Legend. Do you prefer legend over icon?
Oh, I like National Institution. I've got the certificate.
You do? Yes. I was so curious to ask you, because this week I was rewatching a lot of your work, and there is incredible precision in your comedy and in your physicality. But you've written before about when you were younger, you were this awkward, skinny, lanky guy who wasn't very, I guess, precise with their movements. How did you hone that as a craft?
Well, I always had a good sense of timing. So I was good at ball games and bad at athletics because I was 6'4 and I weighed about 60 pounds, you know. And I was weak, physically weak, until I started to put on a little bit of muscle. So I had timing on my side. I always had good timing, but I never thought that I was physically good. But I seemed, because of the sports that I played, I seemed to get better and better at it, and I worked it out. And I also worked out comedy acting, which is ordinary acting with everything that's not necessary taken out.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, and it's not something the audience would be aware of, but mm-hmm. if a straight actor was playing a scene, there would be more emoting. Whereas if you're playing the same scene to get laughs, you've figured out exactly where the pauses are. So it's more highly technical. And that's why a lot of very, very fine actors aren't actually very good at comedy. They're different animals.
Right.
And people don't realize that. And I claim, of course, that basically comedy's harder. But the only problem is it's not usually done very well.
And it does seem like it's harder for dramatic actors to do comedy than comedic actors to do drama. That's not always the case, but it seems
I think that's right. But if they're comedic actors, there's some people who are wonderfully funny, but they're not very good actors. And I would say Peter Cook, who's one of the few geniuses I've ever worked with, was the best at sketches and monologues. But if he came to something that was at all naturalistic, he just couldn't do it. And there's quite a few comics like that. They can't act. They can be very funny.
Right.
And they can do sketches. But there are some that can do both. I mean, Michael Palin is a very, very good straight actor. Eric Idle. Graham Chapman was a fine actor, really wonderful actor. So it's interesting because you see, most people somehow think that drama or something dramatic is sort of older brother to comedy. And I don't think that's fair. I think comedy, well, on the rare occasions when it's done superbly well, I'm thinking of Roxanne with Steve Martin, that's as good as anything.
Right.
Somebody once said to me,
comedy,
he said, it's good enough, it was good enough for Shakespeare and Mozart, it's good enough for me.
When Python was forming, did you guys kind of negotiate who had the better skills in certain areas? Did you have conversations?
No, it just fell into place. I think we basically knew that we were stronger in some areas, and then Gray and I was stronger, and then Mike and Terry were better in other areas. Terry Jones wasn't great on dialogue, but he was very, very good on big ideas, big, strange ideas. Michael was the most talented man I've ever come across for creating comedy characters.
Really?
He wasn't 10 out of 10 on plot, I would say. Mm-hmm. But on creating comedy characters, he was quite phenomenal. And he could write in his little half hours, you know, what were they called, those half hours he did for you? Anyway, he could write three or four different characters in the same show. He was wonderful. Now, Graham just a little bit loopy. and we could use that.
Yeah.
And Eric was very good verbally. He was much the best with puns and you know, those people who would sort of talk themselves up their own, you know. He was wonderful at that, but not so good at writing sketches with a much emotion in them. So we had these strengths and this weakness. But the only thing is, when as writers, we were primarily writers, because we never thought about who was going to do what role. You'd think we were saying, oh, well, I'd like to do that, please. It was never like that at all, because if we'd written something, we knew instinctively who was going to have to play what.
You and I'm sure that's so helpful, because I'm sure so many comedy groups, those are fights that you have, that people would maybe want more stage time than someone else. That's amazing.
Right. Now, the Python fights, and there were plenty of course. Them, always about script. Was the script good enough? And we could get quite heated about that. And sort of silly heated, you know what I mean? Because that we were young and we thought we knew exactly what we were doing. You know?
Oh, of course. Do you go back and watch your work? Do you enjoy that?
No, but when I go out and do the Holy Grail, you see, I watch it.
How many times have you seen Holy Grail now?
Well, I've probably seen it 15 times.
Only 15 times?
Yeah, well, once I've seen the film, you know, in the evening, the audience watches the film when I'm on tour, and then I go out and talk about it for an hour and a quarter. So they always like to get me into the wings on a chair about 20 minutes beforehand. I think they think that if I'm going to have a heart attack, it's less likely if I'm sitting in the wings. Do you see what I mean? It's that sort of... I often say that what I'm really paid for is managing other people's anxiety. But I do watch them, and sometimes I'm very pleased with things, and other times, like the ending of The Holy Grail, watching it so many times, it's much too long.
You think the movie's too
and
long?
And I have actually re-edited it. And if really? I think the audience is interested, I play them the alternative ending and then ask them if they like it better. But, you know, that kind of thing, I have the freedom to do that. And then, you know, you can have fun with the audience. And they're lovely. I have to tell you, Python fans are such lovely people. And I know that sounds like show business bull. It absolutely isn't. They are funny and kind and polite and interesting when you chat to them. So it's a pleasure to go out there, because they wouldn't be there if they hated me, if they thought Cleese, he's awful, hasn't made anyone laugh for 40 years, you know, then they wouldn't buy tickets.
I was thinking about this today. It's so remarkable and special that you still enjoy talking about your work. So I imagine some people are saying, oh, that was a few decades ago. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's so great that the joy people have from your project also brings your joy.
Well,
that's
the nicest
so nice.
Thing in the world is people come up to me and they say, may I shake your hand? And then as we shake hands, they say, thank you for making me laugh for 40 years. I mean, it doesn't get nicer than that.
Yeah. I also imagine people come up to you and say quotes from films,
well,
ask you to do certain things.
They usually... ask the same questions. Were there really only 12 episodes of Fawlty Towers? I've been asked that several thousand
really?
Times.
Really? That's one of the most common
questions. Which you wouldn't guess, but that's what everyone asks me. Which of the Monty Pythons did you dislike the most? Which I always say that's a very difficult decision.
Did that change over time, maybe? And
oh, yes. Yeah. We used to have our dust-ups. But somebody said we really like a lot of brothers. We're quite competitive. We're always putting each other up. If anybody attacks one of us, you know what I mean?
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was really quite helpful, though, to be competitive with each other. Was that the case, or maybe not?
Well, we were not within the show. We had a strange rule, which I wasn't conscious of for some time, is we never, ever discussed any work we did outside Python with each other.
Oh, that's interesting. Probably a really smart idea.
I think
idea.
There was an underlying envy and you know, we didn't want our friends to have failures, but we didn't want them to be too triumphant successes.
You wanted to keep each other in check a little bit.
I don't know. There was a bit of a bit of competition, but basically there was a very good deal of goodwill.
Yeah.
And occasionally, if we got pissed off with each other, well, if you put 5-6 guys together for 40 years, what do you expect?
It would be strange if that wasn't the case.
Oh, it would be extraordinary.
Yeah.
And almost certainly they wouldn't have produced anything of much value.
Right, right.
Because there's something about the spontaneity of emotion that also creates a spontaneity of great humor.
Yeah. Well, I want to say, as someone who's works in comedy now and was interested in comedy from a young age, you really did inspire me to get into the field. You've inspired countless people around the world.
I know, and it's such an extraordinary compliment. Yeah. And I thank you.
It's true for a lot of people.
I don't quite understand it, but I'm delighted it's the case.
I imagine, how old were you when you started working with Python?
Let me think. 69, 39. I was 30 during the first series.
30. Yeah, I imagine when you were a 30-year-old working on that, you were not imagining that kids and teenagers someday would say.
Oh,
but I'm sure you must hear it all the time, that you really inspired people to get into comedy.
It's amazing, and it's very, very nice, and some very well-known comedians have said that.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, but
Seth Meyers.
I think I think the greatest advantage of Python was that it was basically silly.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think there's enough silliness in the world.
Right.
Well, there's more than enough silliness in the real world. But I don't think there's enough. And so the loveliest thing that anyone ever said to me about Monty Python, this was halfway through the first series, he said, I found that if I watch Monty Python, I cannot then watch the news because I can't take it seriously. And I think that is very, very healthy.
Yes.
Because I think taking a lot of what's going on in the world seriously and pretending that it's anything other than mildly insane at best is crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. Well, thank you again for being here, and thank you for the work you've done that inspired so many people. It's really remarkable. It's such a pleasure to meet the comedy, to be a grand legend.
National
That's Institute, right. Yeah.
Idol or icon also sometimes.
The trifecta. John, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure speaking
pleasure.
With you.
I once said to an English interviewer, he said, would you like any kind of honor? Because I turned down a peerage because it meant staying in England in the winter. There's no way I was going to do that. And I said to him, I'd like an OBE. And he said, what, a Order of the British Empire? I said, no, an out-of-body experience.
Thank you so much.
Our guest is a Tony Award-winning actor who is currently starring in the Broadway revival of Angels in America. Please welcome back to the show one of our favorites, Nathan Lane, everybody. Nathan, thank you for being here. Thank you for spending your night off from Broadway to be with us.
It is my pleasure. You're my favorite. I'm going to say it out loud. You're my favorite.
That is so kind of you to say.
And I think it's because I didn't go to college, and you're like the frat bro I never had.
Oh, thank you.
I look at you, and I think we're going to have fun. We're going to do jello shots. We're going to chat up some fine ladies. We're going to make a night of it.
Oh, my God, and we haven't done that once. Well, now I also aspire to that.
Oh, me too. I'm sorry, I was a little late. My security clearance at Rockefeller Center was downgraded.
Oh, no.
Yes, so technically I'm not even a guest tonight. I'm now an NBC page.
Oh, no.
So I can answer your questions, but I will have to get back to my tour group. And they say I'm not topical. You know, I'm beginning to worry for Jared Kushner.
You are.
He's way too pretty for prison.
Oh, yeah. He's very handsome. Very
well,
handsome.
Well, for the White House, yeah.
Wait, are you saying there's a lower bar at the White House?
I think so.
Okay.
It starts right at the top.
I wanna ask about the Oscars they were presented last night.
Yeah,
Did you watch?
Tell me who won.
Oh, you
I DVR'd it, and don't tell me best sound mixing.
I'll be very upset. Oh, okay.
Yes, I did see it. Apparently, due to the recent controversy, no one wanted to talk to Ryan Seacrest, which means nothing changed there. But when I heard that a woman accused him of sexual harassment, my first thought was, a woman? Boy. Do I owe some people a lot of money? The nice thing was the in memoriam segment included all the staffers let go by the Trump administration.
Yes, it was nice. I thought it was a very
and
nice
And I was
touch.
Very happy that best animated short went to Kevin Hart. And but everybody's favorite movie is Black Panther.
Yeah.
I loved Black Panther.
Oh, you did?
Oh, Black Panther, which coincidentally is the name of Betty White's personal device. Perhaps I've said too much. I read it in Parade magazine.
It was not in Parade magazine.
So, look, here's the problem with the Oscars. I hate to point out the obvious, but there's so many award shows.
There
by
are.
The time you get to it, it's anticlimactic.
It is.
The week before, I saw the AARP Movies for Grown-Ups Awards. The category was Best Performance by a Leading Actor with a Hip Replacement.
Oh, no.
Best Supporting Actor in an Adult Diaper. It got to be stopped.
Do you now? You mentioned the moon we're living. A lot of stories
yes.
have broken about the terrible
yes.
behavior of men in Hollywood over the years.
Yes.
How do you feel about the current state of Hollywood? Are you feeling optimistic?
Well, no.
Okay.
No. I think just everyone's just frightened right now.
Yeah.
And I hope it will grow and become a real understanding between men and women. But recently, you know, Disney, it's happening at Disney.
Yeah.
Disney executive was accused of making lewd comments to his employees. But I did some research, and things at Disney, sexual harassment, it goes way back.
Oh, it does?
Oh, yeah. In the old days, Mickey Mouse got quite handsy with Minnie.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, he used to brag about his sexual prowess. I'm big, really big! It was in the police
this
report.
You've read the police report.
Donald Duck was accused of indecent exposure to Daisy.
Uh-huh.
Although he only wears half a sailor suit. He's pretty much exposed to everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And saddest of all, beloved Goofy
no.
was once found in a Los Angeles hotel room with the three little pigs. There's a lot of huffing and puffing going on. Yeah. You know, the original slogan for Disneyland was the horniest place on earth.
No.
Yeah.
They changed it, though.
But they changed
it. They changed it. That's,
yeah.
That's for the best. Thank
yeah,
goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness.
I want to shift gears because based on everything...
Sure.
Well, I feel... There
Let's
you go.
Get
thank
serious.
You. Let's... Because...
My...
Because...
Sinead O'Connor look... This is for the play.
It speaks to the amazing breath you have as an actor, because this play you're doing, Angels in America, is a very serious play. You're playing Roy Cohn, who's a real person.
The Dr. Frankenstein, too.
Donald Trump's lawyer and mentor.
Lawyer and mentor.
And,
yes, he paid him to do all his dirty work, which I know is shocking. Donald
yeah.
Trump paying someone...
to do his dirty work.
Yeah.
How, you played this part before in London?
Yes, 7 months I was there.
7 months. So, and how has it been so far? How's it been returning to it?
It's, let's put it this way. I've been an actor for 43 years. This is my 21st Broadway show. And I would say this is probably the greatest ensemble of actors I've ever worked with. I mean, certainly the play, is a Pulitzer Prize winner. It's an incredibly funny and profoundly moving piece. And it's all centered around Andrew Garfield, who plays the leading mm-hmm. character, Prior Walter, and he's giving a magnificent performance. And so I think if people know the play, you've never quite seen it done like this. Marianne Elliott is the director. She did War Horse, The Curious Incident of the Dog of the Nighttime. She's incredibly gifted. And inspiring director, and this is, if you think you've seen it, you haven't seen this version, and it's well worth checking out.
I can't wait.
It's a magnificent play.
It really is a magnificent play, and I really can't wait to see you doing it. I wanna ask about something else that's serious, but
yeah.
you actually have a little history with this as well. You know, obviously Harvey Weinstein came up a little bit last night.
Oh, yeah.
He's come up a fair amount, as well he should. You had had a history with him for years, and you had not gotten along with him for a very long time.
Well, I'll tell you what happened, Harvey Weinstein. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. I'm putting my glasses
yeah,
back
yeah,
on
please.
For this. Harvey Weinstein, in 2000, my publicist called and said, Harvey Weinstein would like you to host a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. And he said, you know, he produces a lot of movies. It wouldn't be bad to be on his good side.
Sure.
So I said, okay. And they said he wants to pre-screen the jokes because someone else hosted a fundraiser and said something offensive and he doesn't want to go through that again. I said, okay. But I was working with some writers from Letterman, actually, and who I wasn't worried and we weren't going to do anything offensive. So we never heard from him until the night of the show. And then about an hour beforehand, he came backstage, and like Tony Soprano, and was screaming, you know, you got to cut this, you got to cut that. I don't understand this. This sucks. And I said, no, it's too late. I can't do that now. It's, you know, and as we know,
yeah.
Now he doesn't take no for an answer yeah. easily. So things got heated.
Sure.
And unpleasantries were exchanged. And he said, you know, I'll get someone else to do it. I said, fine. I think I saw Regis Philbin out there. See if he's available. And he started to push me into a corner, and he's screaming at me, and it crescendoed with, I'll ruin you, he said. I'll ruin you. And I said, you can't hurt me. I don't have a film career. So the next thing I know, I'm called up to see Hillary Clinton. She got out of her coffin. She says, listen, I apologize for Harvey, but cut these jokes because it'll just make life easier for all of us. And I said, I gave in and I said, okay. So we do the show. In the middle of the show, I'm supposed to introduce Cher. So then they come to me and they say, Cher is stuck in traffic. Now, when have you last heard that? When you're doing a show. Cher is stuck in traffic. They said, you're going to have to fill.
So I is a nightmare for anyone hosting anything.
Sure.
The last thing you want to hear.
You got your fill. Yeah. So I went out and I said, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, Cher, who was supposed to be here, had a stop to have some emergency plastic surgery. So in the meantime, I'm going to do all the jokes that Harvey Weinstein made me cut. If you find me in the Hudson tomorrow, you'll know why.
It is so wonderful to see you each and every time you're
thank
here.
You,
give
thank
it up
you.
For Nathan Lane, everybody. Angels in America, in previews, Neil Simon Theater, officially opening March 25th.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah here from Late Night and Backstage with Nathan Lane, who is currently starring in the revival of Angels in America on Broadway, which I saw this weekend and is so fantastic.
Thank you, Sarah. This is like, you know, being interviewed after the big ball game.
Yeah.
You're like, we're in the locker room now.
Like those old school microphones.
I don't know what school that would be, but these are the largest microphones I've ever seen, at least since the match game in the 70s. But that was thin. This let's try to describe this for the audience at home. What a big head is on these microphones.
It sort of looks like a pine cone.
Oh, where do you come from? What pine cone looks like that?
I guess more the shape.
It looks like a very dirty Q-tip.
That is actually better than the pine cone. There was a joke that we had talked about in the pre-interview that you didn't get a chance to talk about with Seth.
I hate when I don't get to do all the jokes. Yeah, it was about Barbara Streisand cloning her dog Samantha. She cloned it into two new dogs.
Right.
It's amazing what you could do when you're bored in Hollywood. And then I was going to say, let me tell you something. You know, that isn't the original James Brolin. She had him cloned 10 years ago. There's now four James Brolins. One for laundry, one who's supportive at concerts, Frisky James Brolin, and one just for organ parts. Got it out of my system.
Well, I loved it. I'm glad we got to tell it. You talked about with Seth the fact that this is in previews on Broadway, but you did this for 7 months in London. And the audience in London, it sold out quite quickly. They were really not exposed to Angels in America in the way that Americans have been in the past 25 or so years. Can you explain that?
The play was born in San Francisco at this little teeny tiny theater, the Eureka Theater. It was commissioned by Oscar Eustace, who now runs the Public Theater.
Yeah, okay.
And he and Tony became very close friends, and he commissioned him to write this play. But before they did it there, they did it at the National Theater. It was sent by, when they were going to do it at the Mark Taper Forum eventually.
Okay.
They sent it to Gordon Davidson, who ran it, sent it to the National Theater. I believe it was Richard Eyre who was running it at the time, and they decided to do it there. So this was a 25th anniversary revival of the play, and many people there had not seen it in a long time. And especially it felt like a lot of young people were discovering the play. They had heard about it. And maybe some of them had seen the HBO film, the Mike Nichols film of it, but hadn't seen it on stage. So there was a great hunger for it in London. It sold out in a day, and there were long lines waiting for cancellations. And so it made for an exciting period of playing it. I did it for like 4 months. We rehearsed for 3 months.
Okay,
it was a long time in London.
Yes.
7 months altogether. It's a big commitment, but it's certainly, you know, at the end of these performances, you know, people would leap to their feet, and it's a very special thing that happens, and it's happening again in New York now. You just feel the appreciation for not only Tony Kushner's brilliant work. I mean, this is a masterpiece, certainly an American classic of the 20th century, and that's up there with O'Neill and Williams and Arthur Miller. And it has stood the test of time, and now it feels, because of what we're going through politically in this country, it feels more relevant and more important than even the first time around.
Yeah, I absolutely think. And particularly, you had said this to me on the phone too, that Roy Cohn now is sort of back in the conversation just due to the fact that he was so directly involved with Donald Trump for a lot of years of his life.
Yes, he was his lawyer and mentor, and certainly taught him a lot of the tactics that he's using today. I mean, in the play, he is described by one character as the pole star of human evil. And I'm sure, you know, he's smiling in hell right now, enjoying what's happening and the fact that people are writing about him again.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has a lot to answer for. Certainly in the hands of Tony Kushner, and makes for a fascinating, complex character, and it's a thrilling challenge every night to play him, and especially with this great company of actors I get to work with.
Do you find it hard on your voice? Because what I've noticed in the play, I think part one and part two, a lot of it is you're screaming, you're yelling. You have to.
He yells a lot.
Yes.
He was famous for yelling on the telephone. In fact, he had a secretary, Sue. I want to say her name was Sue Bell, and she actually recorded. I would love to have heard that, because when you see him interviewed, you know, he's very, you know, he's got kind of cold blue shark eyes, dead.
Yeah,
he seems dead behind the eyes, and he's very lawyerly. And considered, but apparently when he was on the phone, he was a maniac. I should knock wood. I haven't had trouble with my voice. It's beautifully structured, so that especially in the first play, there's many breaks between scenes for, you know, the character is sort of used sparingly, just when things. You know, he's an exciting character because you never know what he's going to do. But
yeah.
There are a lot of breaks. So, thankfully, it's not been a problem vocally.
Well, it's fantastic, and you're fantastic in it. And I hope everyone gets a chance to see it.
I hope so, too.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Sarah.
Get some rest.
Yes, I'm going to go lie down right now.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.